the voice of racing on NBC, and this summer, the voice of racing at Del Mar. That's going to be pretty cool. Larry, good morning, my friend.
How are you, man? How's everything going out there?
I'm good. Everything's good here. How's everything in the Empire State?
Well, it's different. I'm here at the hotel right now. I haven't made my way to the track yet, but obviously, this year's Belmont is going to be different in that, you know, there's not going to be the crowd and everything, but you kind of sense it's just not like it normally is, but it's still the Triple Crown, and I'm pretty fired up to get going today.
Yeah, 5 years since that call of American Pharoah winning the Triple Crown. When you hear that call, and I know you heard it a million times now, but when you hear that call and you think back on that day, what are some of the first things that come to mind?
Well, it was just, there was nothing like that day. And the whole week leading up to it was crazy. And I remember the night before the Belmont Stakes, we were here where I'm staying right now at the Garden City Hotel, and having dinner was with Tom Hammond and Donna Brothers. And at the next table, Penny Chenery was sitting, the owner of Secretariat. And she came up to us and she started talking to us. And I'm like, here I am the day before I'm going to, call a horse going for the Triple Crown. And here's the owner of Secretariat. And I'm just thinking, this is going to happen. This just, all the signs are leading that this is going to be the one. And from that time on, that whole day it was almost like it was a blur. Because it was so, so great. And I just remembered when the race was over, and NBC caught Victor Espinoza with a couple of words I guess you didn't want on the air in celebration. I remember I said a little worse in the announcer's booth. I was totally overcome by what had happened. I'm like, did this just really happen? Am I dreaming this? But it was just, it was a surreal day, and today probably will be almost the exact opposite.
Yeah, and for very, very different reasons. Tell me about what's different this year. There's a lot of things different with your broadcast position and the way you're going to have to call this race and being a mile and an eighth race. Tell me about some of the things you're going to be dealing with.
Well, I'm going to be calling the race from the stands pretty much. The third floor of Belmont Park, Section 3K, right behind there's a platform, and that's where I'm standing. And it's a little lower view, but I called about four races yesterday just warming up, and it was fine. I didn't mind calling from that spot at all. You could see pretty well. So I'm looking forward to that. I was also wondering what it would sound like with no people. And I must say that some of the connections of the horses, the grooms, they're pretty loud when they're rooting their horses home. So it sounded like there was a crowd there, because the few people that were allowed there were very vocal. So that was kind of cool to see. But it's going to be so different in that, when the horses go to the starting gate for the Belmont, normally they start right in front of the stands. The place is packed to the max. And the fans by that time of day, they've had a few cocktails usually too, and which helps. But the place is raucous. It just gets louder and louder as the horses go to the starting gate, which is right there. Now, this time, there is no crowd, so you won't hear any of that, and you won't see the starting gate there. It's at a mile and an eighth, which is at the top of the backstretch, at the end of the chute. And Randy Moss pointed this out yesterday at our meeting, that it is the farthest away starting point from the grandstand of any race in North America. Nothing starts farther away than this year's Belmont will. So that's the polar opposite of what it normally is. So there's going to be a few different things going on that'll make it interesting. But I think we're going to have fun nonetheless.
Yeah, and when you take a look at the field and some of the storylines that are associated with this year's field, there's certainly no shortage of storylines. And I know that this is different because the Belmont's run is the first leg for the first time in history, and the difference in distances and all that kind of stuff. But when you look at just the storylines, you take a connection like Tis the Law and Barkley Tag and Jack Knowlton looking to get that Belmont win after coming up short with Funny Side, 6-5 on the morning line. He certainly looks like the horse to beat. Todd Pletcher, Bill Mott, Linda Rice. The trainer side of things is loaded with storylines.
Yeah, Bill Mott is sitting on 5,000 wins. He's just one shy of that. Linda Rice would become the only female trainer to ever win any Triple Crown race. So, I mean, there's two great stories there. And, of course, the Tis the Law story is great. The Saratoga people who will be – I think I heard they're going to be at Pennell's up at Saratoga watching the race. And,
oh, cool.
With a good crowd of people, as many as they're allowed to have. And it should be a fun experience for them. It's the one race that Funnyside did not win, and I'm sure they would love to win the Belmont Stakes. And they sure look like he should win if he runs his race. He's the best horse.
Yeah, there's no doubt about it. Talking with Larry Colmus again, you'll hear his call with us on the network broadcast of the Belmont Stakes in partnership with NBC Sports Audio. You'll also be able to catch him on television, of course, calling the races throughout the day. How many races will you call today, Larry?
I am going to call the ones that are on our broadcast window, which is races 6, 8, 9, and 10. So four races in all. We've got the Jiper, the Acorn, the Wonder Again, and the Belmont Stakes.
You know, we started by talking about American Pharoah and how special that was for you because, of course, you got the call, the first Triple Crown winner in 37 years. But look back on some other Belmont Stakes memories that you can share with us. What was the first Belmont you attended? What are some of the other moments that stand out to you?
The first Belmont I ever attended was Swale back in 1984. I remember going to the Belmont that year, taking a little drive up to New York from Maryland. I would have been 17, I think, at the time. I hadn't called my first race yet. I would call it a year later. So that was the first Belmont I ever went to. I remember going to watch AP Indy in the Belmont Stakes, and we had breakfast in the track kitchen in the morning, and Neil Drysdale was there. So that is something I certainly recall. As far as the first one I ever called for NBC, my friend Kelly Breen won the race with Ruler on Ice. And
yeah.
So that was kind of cool. There's been several. Obviously, Pharoah sticks out, and Justify would be number two behind him, having won the Triple Crown too. But the Belmont, the day is always electric and exciting. And even though it'll be different this year, it'll still be just as exciting for me to call these great races.
How do you compare those two experiences, American Pharoah, Justify, both Triple Crowns, but very different experiences? How do you describe them?
You know, poor Justify. It wasn't his fault American Pharoah won the Triple Crown before he did. I mean, he did. He certainly took away a lot of, the excitement by doing it 3 years before. But, it was still fantastic. And, Justify was undefeated and ended up that way, having never run again after that. But it was just, it was one of those great feelings to be a part of history as always, but was it as exciting and electric as Pharoah? No, because of Pharoah, because he had been the one that had ended that 37-year drought. So, it takes nothing away from Justify. Like I said, it really wasn't his fault that it was already done a few years before him. And I'm sure the same thing with Seattle Slough when Secretariat won the Triple Crown and, of course, affirmed the year after that, everybody just thought it was too easy. They just do it every year, and then all of a sudden it never happened again for 37 years.
Yeah, you could almost argue that Justify's Triple Crown run was more impressive than American Pharoah, considering the fact that he didn't get started until his three-year-old season and ran through the litany of races undefeated.
It would have been nice to see him keep running. It would have been fantastic to see what kind of horse he would have continued on to be. Because what we saw in the brief time that we saw him was spectacular. I mean, he was something special and just a huge, gorgeous horse to look at as well. So, I'd like to one of these days get out over there and in Kentucky and see both of them. And we did that with Pharoah, but I haven't had a chance to see Justify. I know he's not as nice as Pharoah, but it would be kind of cool.
As the horses go into the starting gate, right around 5:45 Eastern time this afternoon, Tis the Law, the heavy favorite. How focused will you be on Tis the Law when they're breaking from the gate and trying to keep an eye on everybody else too?
Yeah, you're going to focus a little more on him than everybody else. That's kind of how I normally would handle a high level race like this, is to have just a bit more focus on the favorite in the race. Like leading up to the Kentucky Derby every year, there's always a favorite, and you want to see how they come out of the gate. And I'll probably comment, when they break, that he had whatever start he had, a smooth start, not smooth start. And then you just you look for everybody else, and that's when Animal Kingdom, that was the first Belmont I called. Animal Kingdom had trouble at the start of the race, and luckily I had seen it because I was focusing solely on him and Shackelford, the Derby and the Preakness winner. And, it was not that huge of a deal, but if you don't have your binoculars glued on him, you might not see it. And so I think it's important to pick up on those things.
How cool would it be if Luca Panici were to win the Belmont Stakes?
I know, right? He's such a great guy. I didn't realize that he and Frankie Dettori were like buddies from way back when. But Luca has been plying his trade in Florida for years, and not a guy that gets these opportunities. He rides horses that are generally not the quality of a Sole Volante, and especially in a Triple Crown race. There are very few people as nice as Luca Panici in this game. He's such a good guy, and always fun to talk with. And I'm definitely, if that horse wins, Luca's name will definitely be mentioned because he's such a good guy, and I'd love to see it happen. It would be great for the Reeves family too, the owners of Sole Volante, who are terrific people as well, and have gotten to be good friends.
Yeah, as a fellow wine enthusiast, I suggest that you suck up to Luca and give him a big call today if he does win. He was telling me the other day that his family and he himself rode for the owners of Antinori Vineyards in Italy, and they make a wine, Sassicaia, which in 2015 was the number one wine in the world. And he rode and won races for that family, who was very involved with horse racing. So you might want to stay close to Luca Panici.
Yeah. In fact, the Sassicaia was the wine I remember that they gave Tom Durkett in his going away at Saratoga when they were giving him gifts in the winner's circle. So that's good to know. Maybe Luca can help me out with a bottle of that, too.
Yeah, just the 2015 vintage. The 2016 is undrinkable.
All.
Yeah. Larry, listen, appreciate the visit, my friend. Thanks for taking the time, and always good to hear your voice, and can't wait to hear it on our coverage later today and on NBC TV.
Absolutely, and let's have some fun today.